Is that a little vindaloo?
I don't know. Is it vindaloo, Dan? Is that a little bit of vindaloo on your outfit, buddy boy? Because we're just up here a little bit early, right? Saturday morning, Saturday morning, if you're here with me. We're sitting here and we're drinking coffee. We're just chatting. So, let's see what we can see, right? I'm going to pull up something from The Guardian, if that's okay. It's probably going to take a second to share. I hope it does share. It's one of those situations where it's hard to know for certain if it will, because some of these things have been blocked. So, if this ends up getting blocked or something, I'm sorry. Headline, this is from The Guardian, as of March the 20th, 2026. NASA returns moon rocket to pad and targets April Fool's Day for the launch. After a series of delays, the U.S. Space Agency hopes to carry out something real special. They're going to return to the moon after more than half a century. They're going to orbit the moon. They're going to leave a trucker bomb. They will leave a bag, a colostomy bag filled with poop and urine, and they'll dump it on the moon to prove they went there. A Chinese probe will collect up the biological material and create a race of super soldiers based upon it. Yeah, okay. NASA has begun returning its towering SLS rocket and Orion spacecraft to its Florida launch pad before a planned flyby of the moon after completing necessary repairs. Artemis engineers began the maneuver, which can take up to 12 hours at 8 p.m. local time. The U.S. Space Agency will then begin the final preparations before its next launch window, which opens on April the 1st. The immense orange and white Space Launch System rocket and the Orion vessel will be slowly wheeled out of the assembly building at the Kennedy Space Center in Florida and painstakingly moved 4 miles to Launch Pad 39B. If the tests are satisfactory, 3 U.S. astronauts and 1 Canuck will head to the moon and fly around the Earth's satellite. The mission, due to last about 10 days, would be a huge step towards Americans once again setting foot on the lunar surface, a goal announced by President Donald Trump in his first term. But that ambition has been plagued by delays. Late last month, NASA detected an issue with helium flow and decided to roll the Artemis II stack, which weighs 5,000 tons, back into the vehicle assembly building to investigate the problem and make necessary repairs. That meant a March launch was out of the question. Before that setback, NASA had discovered other technical problems. We need a different kind of sound for this. A different kind of sound for different kinds of fucking problems. What do you guys think? We want to talk about your fucking problems? Before that setback, NASA had discovered other technical problems, including a liquid hydrogen leak that cut short a wet dress rehearsal for the launch. The agency is now hopeful that the first crewed flyby in more than half a century will get off the ground in early April. That's April Fool's Day. Meanwhile, the Artemis II astronaut flight crew are at the strip club. There they are, they're at the strip club. That's so nice. Dan, that's so nice that you talk about them being at the fucking strip club. Well, you know they're at the fucking strip club, you motherfucker. Assuming any of this is seen by you, the new fuel to make oil obsolete, it's coming to a theater near you. Outer space. I find it interesting that April the 1st is now the launch date. I'm not saying that means anything, but I'm also not saying it doesn't mean anything. Because, really. According to the predictions of 2025, this is the year for artificial intelligence. This is the year for fusion energy. We go back to the moon. Elon Musk opens, you know, his colostomy bag. No, I'm kidding. Elon Musk opens up a dildo factory on Mars. All of it in 2026. And maybe we do end up with a movie called Return to the Moon, you know? And maybe they make it there and they make it back again. Or maybe they don't make it. April Fools. I'll call them April Fools. April Fools. Maybe their spaceship launches to outer space. Maybe they go out there and find the sacred race. Maybe the Greys or the reptilians show up for lunch and they have a bunch of hugs. Would you like to try some of our Tang, Mr. and Mrs. Alien? Here's some freeze-dried okra squash souffle, you fucking alien. Yeah. I don't know, guys. I mean, One of the most important questions we can ask when it comes to the news is, how relevant is it to our lives? I mean, I can't tell you for certain anything about outer space or the space program, other than we've been told that they've done fantastic things. And we've been told they can see deep into space, and that's pretty fucking fantastic. And, you know, they've discovered so many Earth-like planets, and that's even more fantastic. And if we had some sort of interstellar starship, we could visit those planets, you know, drop off samples, free samples. Human protein greases to save the human race from what's coming. Yeah, who knows? Outer space, right? But Dan, you know, don't you believe in the future? And it's like, I sure as shit think the future's heading at us like a fucking Mack truck. So yeah, I believe in the future. I just don't know that it's going to be exactly what Elon Musk has been telling you. No offense, though, right? I'm not sure the edgelords on Joe Rogan will help you. Sorry. And if your favorite YouTube channel has more than 1,000 people following it, then probably they're full of shit too. So I don't know who you're going to go to find out the truth about this launch system rocket and Orion and the Artemis crew and the trip to the moon. It's fairly fantastical, especially when you consider they told us that nobody can go through the Van Allen belts, but we've done it a few times before, right? And then for many decades, we forgot how to go to the moon, and it's clear because of these delays, we still kind of don't know how, even though we once did. It all makes sense. And wouldn't it be a clever trick of human history if we forgot how to make the most complicated and nasty piece of engineering in history, and that's nuclear weapons? I mean, it's so fucking convenient. We forget how to make, you know, make a moon ship. But we don't forget how to make ICBMs. We forget how to make our moon rocket. Yeah, but we got germs in the pocket. Yeah. We forget how we went to the moon. We don't forget how to design biological and chemical weapons. We don't forget how to design nuclear weapons. We not only don't forget, but we forget and we improve the idea of hypersonics, everybody building missiles. We don't forget a lot of really complicated shit. But when it comes to going to the fucking moon, we just forgot for a while. And now we're still remembering so we can fix those fucking helium leaks, right? I don't know. But we're going to the moon, so get ready. Get ready for April the 1st. We may head to the moon then. It's hard to say. Nobody knows for sure. So we got a chance to catch up with an old friend yesterday on the podcast, and that was good. It's good to hear from Justin. It's good to hear that he's back in Utah. It's good to hear that, you know, Beth and Justin are back together. I kind of think there's been a lot of stress for a lot of people when it comes to relationships, and nobody wants to give up on love, right? And I mean, I think he echoes the truths that whatever's going on, it's not more of the same. And it does appear like it's probably going to get worse, but it's hard to say how. And different parts of the country are suffering from different levels of, let's just call it disintegration, because maybe collapse is the wrong word. Collapse happens, obviously, but in some ways what happens before collapse is disintegration. It's like the bouncy castle, okay? A bouncy castle is made of polymers. It has a motor. It has metals and tubing. And all of the synthetics that make up the fabric, the skin of the bouncy castle, they have rates at which they decay and disintegrate. And the disintegration always happens before the leak. And the leak always happens before the collapse. If you could see it 10 years ago, a lot of us noticed the disintegration. We noticed, you know, around the edges that things were kind of falling apart, but there were no big leaks yet, at least no obvious ones. And so 10 years ago, you would have said, yeah, Dan, I can see that the edges of the bouncy castle are getting a little worn, and eventually there's going to be a rip, but the motor's still working okay, and the bouncy castle still works. Let the kids play, right? Let the kids have some fun. And then maybe about 5, 6, 7 years ago, we noticed the first big leaks, and we said, well, shit, there are leaks, but we got Formagasket, we got aviation tape and duct tape and fucking Gorilla Tape. Every time we see one of those fucking rips, we'll just tape it up with glue and crapola and whatever magical fucking gumbus we pull out of our butt crack. And we'll be fine, Dan. It just has to dry, let it set. We'll turn the motor down a little, you know, take the pressure off. So yeah, 10 years ago, we would have noticed the wear and tear on the bouncy castle that we call modernity. And maybe 5, 6 years ago, 6, 7, we would have noticed the first leaks. And then maybe now, people are starting to notice that the bouncy castle's deflating. And no amount of the king's horses and the king's men and magical artificial intelligence, rockets to the moon, cold fusion breakthroughs, none of these fantastical stories you're going to read about in Popular Mechanics or Scientific American, none of it is going to fix the bouncy castle. None of it. The AI is not going to fix it. And as it folds in upon itself, people will scream and yell, why didn't somebody say something? And a lot of people will look to target people who did say something because we didn't speak loud enough. If you want to understand one of the reasons why a piece of shit like me, in whatever state I'm in, is awfully close to giving up on God, it's really quite simple. God didn't do this to us. We did this to us, all of us. God didn't send us down this road. We chose to go down this road. The Lord gave us a world that could have been a garden. We're the ones who listened to Lucifer and said, oh, but it could be a paradise. It could be a paradise, Lord. It's not going to be a garden. Gardens for the peasants, you know. We elite humans, we need a paradise with towers of gold and glass, lights that everlast, power and energy, clean water, toiletry, a paradise. But as I've said so many times before, and I'm a broken record, in the process of trying to turn our world, the human world, into a paradise, we've managed to turn the planet into a landfill. We thought we were in paradise. In reality, we're in a fallen place. In the fallen place, you can make it a garden. You can't make it a paradise. It's a fuck around and find out place. It's a land of consequences. And whatever's coming next, and I really don't know for certain what it is, and I don't want to scare the fuck out of people, but if all of this nonsense, this high-intensity, strategic, military, psychological warfare had ended in 2021, I would have said it's just the Scroobly, it's just the Great Financial Crisis Part 2, it's just a road bump in terms of the central bank autocracy, and there's not much we can do about it, but at least we're all going to be able to go to Walmart still. If this had ended in 2021, I would have said okay, but it didn't. And whatever the Ukraine war is, whatever the Iran situation is, one thing is absolutely certain. There's been a virtual news blackout, almost a complete news blackout of any decent news from the Arctic Circle since 2019. You can say that's accidental. You can say that's because of the COVID. You can say, oh, but Dan, we're at war with Russia and Siberia. I know, I get it. Siberia is most of the Arctic Circle, and the other part is pretty much NATO. I get it. It's the US, it's NATO, it's Canada. It's off limits. I've even tried to reach out to First Peoples, Indigenous peoples in the Northern Territories of Canada, because I don't know anybody who lives on the Arctic Circle, but there are some contacts I've had, I don't want to go into it, to people that live in the Northern Territories of Canada. I can't reach anybody. I can't contact anybody. I keep hoping a listener lives in the Northern Territories, a verified human being, but the problem is I get more trolls and feds than real people. So even if somebody reaches out to me and says, oh, Dan, you know, I'm a oil worker in Alberta and we got 25,000 feet of snow and you caught 900 pounds of salmon last year, and I get it. But a lot of your shit doesn't add up. It's like the other fellow from Canada. I hope he still listens. His shit never added up. Like, he had a kind of investing thing going on, but really poor telecom. And none of it ever made any sense. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I'd like to find a verifiable human from the Northern Territories and find out if it's starting to smell like ass up there. Because if the Arctic permafrost is in collapse, one of the features of that joy will be the Arctic Circle, especially in the summertime, smelling like literally like ancient 10,000-year-old butt crack. Like a whole hell. Like, if you can imagine how nasty the miasma would be if you had an actual hole or tunnel that led to hell, if you can imagine that smell, it's not just sulfur. No. That's for the kindergarten. It's the worst thing you can imagine. It's hydrogen sulfide. It's the smell of dead deer on steroids. It's worse. If that's what's going on during the summers now, the Arctic smells like ass. and that's not as bad as it could get, really. That's just the start of a non-linear process. And like compounding interest, it will creep up on you. And it has a big fat zero, see, zero, to do with eating cheeseburgers or driving your SUV. No doubt they like to guilt trip the poor people, but no, the poors didn't cause this. It's even plausible that none of this happened on purpose, but the point is, I do think there are people that knew about this for decades. And they repackaged it and they sold it as a guilt trip. And they sold it as a means to have total control at the end. And they sold it as a means to spin geoengineering, which they've been doing since World War II, and to sell the concept to other countries. Hey, you know, maybe the climate is in rapid collapse, but we can spray aluminum salts into the sky, and we can use barium and endothermics to reduce the temperature, and we can all live at a dry cleaning facility, essentially. The Earth can become one giant dry cleaner. And of course, we'll all probably die of lung cancer, but at least we'll be able to go skiing, you know? So you tell me, buddy, what's going on? What's going on, man? So the Iran situation, if we're going to play pretend, let's play pretend. We're going to pretend we go to the moon. We're going to pretend that the Iran situation is real. The Iran situation is intriguing, mainly because I think that the options we have on the table are limited. And I've believed for many years, if you listen to my podcast, I've said this, the United States is not currently capable of carrying on high-intensity conventional warfare against any opponent with any real means. I mean, yes, can we kick the asses of Venezuela? Find any old poor family and the United States can break down its door and steal its shit. Absolutely. As far as bullies go, we're the biggest bully on the block. The problem is when it comes to nations that are not pushovers, or rather families that have guns, like the state of Iran, they're not just going to suffer a bully forever. And I think we're learning that Iran's fed up. Like, they're definitely not going to come to the peace table. Why would they? They've been to the peace table more than once. They've broken bread, and each time they've been basically fucked. And if you look upon the history of treaties, specifically treaties signed by the United States of America, you would not be surprised how many are broken by, you know, the United States of America, to include Bretton Woods. Oh, Dan, what's Bretton? We don't talk about Bretton Woods because Bretton Woods was supposed to protect the value of money so that we didn't end up with radical regimes taking over, like the 1930s. So we're going to protect money. We're not going to inflate money. We're not going to print money. We're going to protect money, and we're going to make it convertible to gold. And we were supposed to maintain the Bretton Woods contract, what we did until 1972. And then after 1972, we pointed a gun at the world and said, you want to buy oil? You can have as much oil as you want, but you better fucking use dollars, right? You better use dollars or else, you know, Mr. Cap Gun's going to cap your ass. That only works so long. We do not have the resources for a high-intensity conventional conflict with Iran. And that's assuming they don't get anything more than intel support from Russia and China. If they get any kind of logistical support from Russia and China, which I think is more likely than not, then the conflict with Iran has zero clean exit, and the only viable move for Trump, and again, this is all about speed. Like, the longer we wait, the longer we postpone any action, the worse it is for us. People think it's not that way, but it is, especially when it comes to the world economy. The longer we postpone any action where we can convince markets we have control, the more weeks we wait, the more months we wait, the more dithering and blathering. Because Trump's blathering about how he won the war. Trump says he won, and that's great, but I don't think the Iranians are going to get the message. It's a scary thought because nobody wants to contemplate it, and it does fit into one of those weird sort of fringe conspiracy theories, which is, are nuclear weapons real? And I don't want to go there because my own family and other factors leads me to believe that this is a bigger question than any of us can answer at this point in terms of my family history. But that being said, yeah, if nuclear weapons are real, which again, you know, we went to the moon, nuclear weapons are real, it's just something that is. If they're real, then we could be on the verge of the use of a nuclear weapon in conflict for the first time since 1945. And I think it's days away. It's not weeks away. It's not months away. It's days away. Trump has days to stabilize the markets. Trump has days to convince Iran to stop. I don't think you can convince any nation to stop unless you're willing to go right up to the edge. And at this point, the edge of escalation is not boots on the ground. Iran would love that. The Russians would love that. The Chinese would love it. If we served up Marines and 82nd Airborne and various armored cavalry units, if we served them up in the deserts and the mountains of Iran, everybody would be happy except for us. So this idea that the most likely next move is some sort of, you know, ground invasion of Karg Island or something, I think it's not probably the case if you think this is an organic conflict, huh? But then why move the Marines, right? Why move the Marines? Why move light units? And there's one reason. If the Israelis in the United States, one or the other, or we both do, a coordinated nuclear strike on Iran, it's not just going to be one device. It probably does mean taking out Tehran, let's be blunt. I don't think Tehran stays functional if Israel and the United States go nuclear. And I think a lot of the facilities that are now quote-unquote protected are not protected because, again, we're talking nuclear weapons. These are not ground penetrator conventional weapons. We're talking tactical nukes, penetrator nukes, 5 kiloton to 50 to 100 kiloton range. We might even drop megatons on places like Tehran because the only way that we could feasibly stop this at this point, and again, this is crazy, this is madness, this is insanity, but the only feasible choice Trump has is not ground troops. Ground troops guarantees a giant failure. In fact, ground troops probably guarantees, at a minimum, his impeachment, but probably a lot worse than that. So it's not going to be, let's have conscription, let's have ground troops. I think right now, in Israel and the United States, they're contemplating how they would use nukes and what that plan would look like. They're probably putting together the plan right now. If the Iranians, and think in terms of the whole red line thing, a good red line for Israel is its desalinization. If the Iranians start targeting desalinization in Israel and Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states, if they start hitting desalinization, then it really will go to the next level. Because, you know, oil's great, you got to make money, but people die after a few days if they don't have water. So if, in fact, they target the desal, then a lot of things go bad quickly. And I think at that point, the state of Israel says to itself, this is the Samson option. We don't have a choice. We either nuke Iran or we're destroyed. This could be days away if you think this is an organic conflict. So I don't know, baby. I don't know, but it is. It's 6 a.m. 6 a.m., pal. Pal, friend of mine. It's 6 a.m. on the Olympic Peninsula. And it is March the 21st, 2026. We're in springtime. Springtime, you know. Flowers are blooming. The birdies are singing springtime songs. The insects are getting ready to do their insect magic. The creatures of the woods are getting ready to get it on and have springtime style sex. It's springtime, isn't it? Let's look at the news really quick here. Oh. All of this news comes from Zero Hedge as of 6:01 a.m. March the 21st, 2026. Front page, I think we've won, Trump says, as Iran refuses Hormuz talks. Houthis threaten Red Sea Strait. Gold suffers worst week in 43 years. Oh boy, as crude crisis and hawkish fear spark bond bloodbath. Qatar LNG repairs could take up to 5 years and cost $20 billion in lost revenue and cripple Chinese supply. I'd like to pay their salaries. Elon Musk offers lifeline to TSA agents as Democrats hold paychecks hostage in shutdown. What the fuck kind of a dickhead who pretends to be some sort of techno-libertarian supports bullshit like TSA? You know something, guys? Elon Musk doesn't have to go through TSA. Nobody grabs his junk. Nobody tries to stick some sort of locator device up his bunghole. People like us. I've had this happen to me. It's one of the many reasons I don't fly. Fuck the TSA. Fuck them. I was going to read an article about how the TSA is living paycheck to paycheck. Welcome to the fucking club. I make less than $1,800 a month. After rent, I got a few hundred bucks for food. I work with kids in an R2 special ed room at a high school. You tell me your fucking troubles, TSA. You tell me your fucking troubles. Top copper stock about to run. Ooh, that's paid for. Britain once led the world. What happened? Switzerland halts military exports to U.S. Great. You won't believe what the U.K. Green Party wants to teach children. I could totally believe it. Smith, colon, the political left, multiculturalism, and other types of trauma monkey bullshit. China claims cyborg breakthrough. An army of dildos. Inside Iran's internet access black market. Holy shit, trauma monkey. First ever look at a trauma monkey called the RQ-180. Tax season will bring record trauma monkeys. IDF Iron Dome operator arrested for having sex with a trauma monkey. The scapegoat, how one man's trauma monkey became all of our trauma monkey. U.S. Asian ally rejects trauma monkey. Super Bowl trauma monkey. If the dollar starts trauma monkey. Qatar trauma monkey. Malaise trauma monkey. Fear of the second wave of trauma monkeys. This is your news. This is your bullshit. Just be prepared. Soon you may die. But Dan, don't you always say it's not the end of the world? I have to repeat that. I have to repeat that to myself over and over again. I really do. I do. But that's your motherfucking news. Now, it's been 40 minutes since I sent out that email. Again, it's the internet. This is 2026. It takes at least 2 hours for an electron to go anywhere, really. Talking into the darkness, whistling in the dark, everything like that, speaking to the darkness, somebody out there in space. Yeah, I don't know. Anywho, as of right now, I would say, I don't know. What do you guys think? Nobody's listening. I can hear myself think, right? I am in a very dark place because I have feared since 2020 that the worst case scenario is the most likely. That if you dig deep enough, what you're going to find is a lot of garbage to cover up something that is horribly simple. Horribly simple in the sense that it might have happened other times in the past. It might be a standard mechanism by which nature gets rid of creatures. It's kind of like a fever when you think about it. And so, in a sense, you can almost respect the strategy and maybe even posit that in 5 or 10 million years, the Earth goes back to a place where life can start again. And maybe we're not permanently locked in Venus syndrome, so maybe there'll be smart creatures out there building shit again in 10 or 20 million years. But not in any frame of time that would matter, and not in any way that we could survive to see it. So I can't really tell you. It's like, if it's that, it's pretty bad. There's no point in talking about it. And it will get so bad so quickly that a lot of people will simply die from shock. It's one of the reasons why, you know, even though I feel like I'm groping towards atheism again, I'm still sort of caught in the fascination of prophecy, because prophecy talks about a time that was so terrible that if it lasted very long, there would be no flesh left alive. And a clathrate gun scenario would match that 100%. And it would be the perfect setup for a false savior, a perfect setup for a faker, a perfect setup for the world's greatest grifter to come along and say, I can fix all your problems, including the clathrate gun, and you'll be okay. But if it's not that, it's simply the brutal reality that we could be in an event like the Paleo-Eocene Thermal Maximum 50 million years ago, then it's just an extinction-level event that is moving along faster than anyone had admitted until recently. And it's important. It's only been the last year that they've said things like, oh, you know that Blue Ocean event that we said would happen in 2100? We might have been off by 75, 80 years. All the major tipping points that they said were 50 to 100 years in the future, we've either hit them or we've passed through them. We're already through them. And there's reason to believe that we're very close to what's called the clouds tipping point, which means natural clouds. I don't mean the shit that Raytheon sprays in the sky, or rather the U.S. Air Force sprays in the sky with Raytheon support. I don't mean the poisonous shit that falls on your head every day. I mean actual natural clouds. At a certain concentration of CO2, they don't form properly. And so basically that natural means by which the Earth protects itself, that the natural means by which we reflect energy back out into space, the natural means of cooling the Earth, one of the means of cooling the Earth is gone. Other than the bullshit they spray, it's over. And it is so unlikely that we will be told the truth. In fact, Trump makes so much sense. When you think about it, a lot of the geoengineering chemtrail bullshit is bound up with a lot of mega freaks. And when people throw out the mega, well, they throw out, oh, damn, chemtrails, that's a conspiracy theory. Yeah, whatever. I mean, I'm not mega. But a lot of mega infiltrated that world. And frankly, Dane Wigington interviewing RFK was a setup too. I'm tired of that guy pretending to be wise and stoic and making so many fucking mistakes. He made a mistake with his documentary. It was poorly edited. He keeps talking about lawsuits. That's fucking stupid at this point. He's telling people to go get t-shirts and flyers and handouts. None of that will help at this point. There are things that might help. Flyers and handouts are not going to help. And then he does an interview with RFK Jr. And you want to say to yourself, oh, this is because, you know, RFK is going to fight. He's going to fight to stop geoengineering. And How naive do you have to be? How naive do you have to be to think that that's the case? So yeah, I like Dane Wigington as far as sources of information go. He's probably the best on the internet when it comes to geoengineering. But he's kind of stupid too, and his ideas are rather dumb, and his takes on COVID are completely flawed. You know, on the one hand, he recognizes they're spraying toxic shit from the sky, and anybody who has a background in epidemiology will tell you that toxic exposure, many kinds of toxic exposure to things that are just chemicals, can look just like the flu, just like the worst fucking cold ever. So why is it in 2020 Dane Wigington so quickly jumped on the COVID is some sort of monkey bat bioweapon? Why does he keep pushing there's so many thousands of bioweapon factories? Military people who research biological warfare come to rational conclusions that are completely separate from the bullshit that Dane Wigington spouts. And then periodically, he'll quote Zbigniew Brzezinski. Of all the fucking evil, vitamin D deficient, piece of shit, deep space spook assholes, he quotes, unironically quotes, Zbigniew Brzezinski. Whatever you want to do with good old Zbigniew, don't quote him unironically unless you're a fucking dumbass. So yeah, Dane Wigington is the only source we have on geoengineering, and he might be a sheepdog. He might be a plant. In fact, most likely he is. Most likely he reflects a certain choice by the deep state to give us a limited hangout, to give people like me a place to go. But in reality, like I said, the lawsuits and the documentary and the handing out of flyers ain't gonna do fucking shit at this point. But good morning. I see one person might be hearing me. Good morning if you're out there. Unless you're the fag from Vegas and you know who I'm talking about. He just left. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that was one of those troll bots that YouTube will send you just to give you a little bit of hope, you know? Because it's not really torture unless you lead someone to believe that someone might actually see what the fuck you're doing. So, yeah, good job, YouTube, you motherfuckers. I don't know. I think Dane Wigington is a great source of information if you know how to parse him. But if you take him in his totality, he's a limited hangout. He's keeping people from solving problems. So I don't know what to tell you. If Dane Wigington is the best we have with respect to geoengineering, then we're fucked. I'm telling you straight up. This is why I'm so close to just tossing in the towel with respect to believing that any of this is more than random. More than just nature accidentally lurching its way in a certain direction. There's no great purpose to it. And yes, we could be the only conscious beings in the universe, and we could be very close to just being snuffed out. And the Earth could get locked into Venus syndrome and be stuck there forever. And life in the universe is gone forever. But Dan, there's spaceships and I know there's spaceships and aliens, and we went to the moon, or did we go to the moon? Hard to say. Hard to say how we went to the moon, but we forgot how we went to the moon. Hard to say. Well, if you can hear me, at least say hello or good morning or something. It's up to you. You don't have to, but just go into the chat box and say good morning or hello. Good morning or hello. Am I right? I'm right. So no, if this had all ended a few years ago, I'd say it's just more economic chicanery. Where we're at today, I think it's kind of fucking ominous. And I think it's moving fast enough. In fact, that's part of it that's kind of spooky. I think it's starting to move fast enough that most people just can't keep up. So they've just locked it all away. They blocked it all out, you know? No moss. If I don't hear it, if I don't see it, and I don't mean the news either. You should lock that out. Block that bullshit out. Block me out, fuck. Turn me off. But open your fucking eyes and look around your natural environment where you fucking live. And I'm telling you, people are noticing that this shit's moving faster. It doesn't mean they believe Al Gore. Doesn't mean they believe Greta Thunberg. Sure as shit doesn't mean they believe the Koch brothers. I think a lot of people are starting to recognize that everybody, every adult in the room is fucking lying. And if this is the clath rate gun, there's a good reason to lie because there's no solution. The best case scenario is 8 or 9 out of 10 people are going to be dead within a few years. And maybe a small population can eke out an existence in bunkers in Antarctica. Maybe. And that in and of itself is speculation and optimism for people that basically either set us up for this or they lied to us about it and prevented our ability to do anything about it, which means just as bad. They chose to lie to us because they were afraid of panic. And I get it. At this point, if they told the truth, you would have panic. Absolute panic if they told the truth. You can't. I thought that the Trump administration was going to tell the truth about geoengineering during a heat wave. I mean, basically turn it off, have the heat wave happen, and then just go before the American people, say, hey, you know, do you want to have the air conditioning, or, you know, and also probably it won't fix any of the problems, or do you just want to head to the end and no palliative care, no hospice? In a lot of ways, geoengineering is hospice, is palliative care. If we're staring down the end of human civilization, what they're doing is softening the blow temporarily. But if this summer is the first long, hot summer, and when I say long, hot summer, I mean a summer that will be super hot, but that won't really end. We'll head into winter. The geoengineering will start to fail, and or it'll reach a level of toxicity that people will notice the fact that people are dropping dead, and they won't be able to call it the COVID or the flu. They won't be able to pretend. If this is the long, hot summer, then we got one or two of these left before everything turns absolutely to shit and it's over. It's not linear. It's not continuous. This is something that confuses people. Listening for many years, my respect and thanks. Hey, how's it going? And that's what I mean by the phrase long, hot summer. That we will reach one of these summers where we don't really have an autumn, we don't really have a winter, where it gets cooler in the wintertime, but it doesn't really cool down, and that permafrost collapse will become so obvious that, yeah, just go visit just about any mountain range, and periodically you'll see some of these mountains just crumble. And why? Because the very thing that was breaking them apart for eons was also holding it together for eons and is melting. So now you have basically rock piles across major mountain ranges that are just going to collapse and crumble, and it's already happening. So you tell me, friends, if the world became locked into a Venus syndrome scenario, how could there be a God? I mean, it's not in prophecy. There's stuff in prophecy that matches the clath rate gun, but there's nothing in prophecy that says we're all just going to be snuffed out by rapid permafrost collapse. And so you have a couple choices. One, we're definitely on the verge, which means the tribulation is here. That's one option. And it's a valid option at this point. I got to tell you guys, even though my faith is fucked, it is a valid option to say to me, Dan, we are on the verge. The other option is that just don't worry about it. You've got 1 or 2 years left, period. 1 or 2 years at most of something kind of normal, probably only a few more months. Because once things start going sideways, it will build. It's cascading, and it's not just environmental. It's not just about the worms and the insects and the bees. It's not just about the algae. It's not just about the oceans. It's about the whole thing. It's about society. And once parts of it start unwinding, bad problems get worse, worse problems get worser, and the worser problems become daily catastrophes. And then it gets even worse. And that's cascading collapse, you know, an avalanche made of tiny freight trains. So we went through the news already. I think we covered some of the subjects, whatever we might have wanted to discuss. One thing to think about when you think about this war with Iran, and again, this is well studied, and I'm not coming up with excuses for people. What choices people make individually is kind of up to them. But one of the things to consider, and it is well studied, that these oil spikes result in unemployment, invariably, which means it pretty much always happens. It's going to happen. And that with unemployment, you get increases in suicide, which means people do, on a percentage basis, predictably kill themselves at a higher rate, increases of 1% to 3%, I think, because of unemployment. So people looking at the situation in Iran and they say, well, Dan, it's just about some higher fuel prices. It's just about this. You can boil it all away. You can ignore it. You can say whatever you want to and think whatever you want to. But one of the impacts of what Trump is doing is going to lead to a lot of people killing themselves. There will, you know, best case, if you want a really bright side, let's bright. Dan, can you put some cocaine in your coffee and bright side? I sure shit can. Let's bright side. What's coming is a recession. Now, I believe we've been in a global depression since 2009, and it's been papered over. But let's play pretend. Let's say the worst case scenario as a result of this Iran fiasco is a recession. A certain number of Americans are going to kill themselves. Now, my question to mega people when I run into them is, how do you feel about that? I can't find one mega person right now that I talk to that will still call themselves mega. There were lots of people a few months ago, I think right around the time Charlie Kirk was whacked, there were people that, you know, would say, well, I'm mega, I believe in it, I still believe in Trump. But it's hard to find a real mega right now. But if you do, confront them with the question, are you okay that your neighbor might end up harming themselves because Trump needed to be the big man, because Israel needed to complete a 20 or 30 year schedule in 2 to 3 years. Just something to think about. You don't need to answer the question, just think about it. I ended up listening to this interview with Joe Kent yesterday. Joe Kent is an administration official, an administration official, counterterrorism, whatever, who left the administration in protest, right? You need to dig into this, Joe Kent. When he starts talking, he talks like somebody who would go back to Trump immediately if Trump made one little change. But what he really talks like is somebody covering their ass. Like, a guy like Joe Kent probably has access to materials that are top secret. And a guy like Joe Kent would probably know, or at least would learn, being in the Trump administration, some secrets that maybe even Trump doesn't know. If a guy like Joe Kent has access, then he would know the real appraisal of the state of the permafrost in the Arctic, because guess what? That's national security. It is. Even the Trump administration 5, 6, 7 years ago admitted that the melting of ice in the Arctic is a national security issue. Now, of course, the Trump administration then framed it as who owns the Arctic. But the reality is Arctic permafrost collapse is a national security issue because it is a catastrophe. It is a mathematical catastrophe in the sense that it's discontinuous. And if the estimates of organic materials in the Arctic are correct, it's a non-linear, discontinuous, potential worldwide extinction level event. And a guy like Joe Kent would find out about it. And probably since he's a parent, maybe he would rather spend his time with his family at the end. So I don't know if I would recommend Joe Kent as a source for anything. You look into his background, he seems like just a crybaby neocon. Yeah, he's special ops, he's CIA. That doesn't make him more trustworthy in my book. It does not make him more trustworthy at all. So we talked about the first mover's dilemma the last couple days. Let's be clear on what this is. Let's say you have one bully. Okay, one bully. One bully, and you have five villagers. One bully, five villagers. The one bully can take on any villager at any time, easily. Knock them out, knock them dead. Just like Venezuela, Iraq, you know, fucking Grenada et al. The bully can kick the ass of one villager. However, the bully can't really kick the ass of two, and if three stand up against the bully's fucked. The problem is, for the five villagers, it's difficult, almost impossible, to communicate with each other because the bully does its best to keep the five villagers divided. So the five villagers don't really talk to each other. They don't really work together. However, like in an oligopoly, automotive market, information flows almost instantaneously. So all of a sudden, the bully picks a fight with the wrong villager and gets a bloody nose. And the other villagers see this, and they curl their fists. The problem of being the first villager to punch the bully in the nose is called the first mover's dilemma. And it is a variant of many problems that are called two-person competitive game theory. Mutually assured destruction is based upon two-person game theory, also called the prisoner's dilemma. So, the system's relatively stable. And believe it or not, there are markets that work like this. Credit default swap markets, derivative markets, they work along the same principles of the first mover's dilemma. And the argument that the stability people make is that, well, it's perfectly stable because everybody knows you don't attack the bully. Just like credit default swaps. Well, you don't. You're not going to see everybody redeem at the same time. Why would everybody redeem at the same time? Well, if everybody's out there and they don't have swimming trunks on and the tide's going out, as Warren would say, they're going to fucking redeem. Redemption. They're going to get that money one way or the other. And they might all want it at the same time. So one villager fights the bully. The bully wins, but the bully gets a bloody nose. Two villagers fight the bully. The bully doesn't win. The villagers don't win either. Three villagers fight the bully. The villagers win. Right now, Iran is showing other parties, other villagers, that the United States is not invulnerable, invincible, and that, in fact, if you have the right key terrain, you can really kick their ass. This happened in Vietnam, too. If you have the right kind of terrain, a lot of our technology simply is, you know, minimized in its impact, denuded, not really as impactful as we'd like to believe. We lose the technological advantage because A, asymmetric warfare, and B, we prepared for war in certain places. I'll give you an example, the Humvee. Oh, doesn't Arnold have a Hummer? Sure as shit he does. He's a fucking dumbass. The Humvee was designed for Europe and the deserts of North Africa. The Humvee was designed for wars against Rommel. If you've ever been stationed in Korea or any place in Asia, as I have, you'll find out that the Humvee's wheel track is too fucking wide. And so it might be perfect if you're rolling across the steppes of Russia certain times a year, and it might be ideal for rolling around Europe for the great European land battles, or North Africa when you're fighting Rommel. But if you find yourself in Korea and you're driving around Humvees, you're going to lose a few of them off of these roads. These roads are not designed for Humvees. They've never been designed for Humvees. A lot of our wheeled traffic in the United States Army is simply too wide a wheelbase for Asian roads. So when people say things like, well, we're ready for war anywhere, are we? The other thing is this, because we're the bully, and because Iran is showing the world right now that we can't simply push everybody over, there are lots of countries, to include North Korea, who are probably considering right now their options. Now, the good news with North Korea is China controls them. The bad news with North Korea is China controls them. China's probably looking at Taiwan right now, and they're probably testing what I would call the soft solution, which means they go to the Taiwanese government and they say, listen, we could launch missiles, we could invade. What we'd rather do is just co-opt you the way we did Hong Kong. And if they frame it in those terms, certainly the higher-ups are going to fight back. But ordinary Taiwanese, I don't think they want World War III. I seriously doubt that. I'm not saying they want to be part of the People's Republic of China, but whether they like it or not, the war that Chiang Kai-shek fought was lost, and Taiwan was the last holdout, and one of those days, Taiwan was going to become part of mainland China again. So whether we like it or not, Formosa, Taiwan is going to be part of China. If they go to Taiwan with the soft solution and the government of Taiwan secretly says okay, then the Chinese could simply do an Anschluss, you know, like what the Germans did in 38 with Austria. Simply move in the troops, move in the equipment, move in the missiles, sit on Taiwan. Maybe the Taiwanese put on a minimal show of force so that it looks like they kind of fought back. But that's not even likely. It's more likely they simply get invited in. And then what do? If the Taiwanese invite in the Chinese because the Chinese threaten to basically obliterate them with rockets, what do then? The Chinese are in Taiwan at that point. They have their tanks and missiles there. They've taken over the government. They've taken over the chip factories. I can keep going. What exactly do we do then? I think the idea that we could do anything is absurd unless we wanted to go to total war. And I said this before, I'll say it again. To get to a point where we could fight the way we did during World War II would take at least 1 to 2 years of mobilization we have not done. And then there's the issue of, would Americans put up with this shit? Do we really want to be involved in a World War III scenario where our lives are basically reduced to producing weapons and producing minimal consumer items to basically eke out an existence while our air fills with radioactivity and toxins? Sounds like fun. Sounds like a good, don't threaten me with a good time, Dan, you know? Don't threaten me with a good time, Dan. Don't threaten me with a good time. Toxic air, radioactivity, sounds nice. Sounds like my yearly vacation to Chernobyl. So yeah, it looks interesting. Right now, the bully in the first mover's dilemma problem has now the bully has the problem, because the bully knows that all the players know that if at least three of them stood up to the bully at the same time, the bully's fucked. If Russia, China, and Iran stand up to us at the same time, we would only have one choice, and that is to back down or not. If we don't back down, the only choice we have beyond that is nuclear war. That's it. We don't have the option of drafting everybody. We don't have the option of converting plowshares into swords. We don't have the options we used to have, because this is the end of empire, not the beginning. So we could use nuclear weapons. We could threaten the use of nuclear weapons. I think we could be, as I said, days away from the state of Israel using nukes against Iran. And the real trigger will be the desalinization. Because if this is real, if this whole conflict is real, where it gets super real is when you can't produce fresh water. And let's say the long hot summer is nearby. And if the long hot summer is nearby, and you're taking out power generation, air conditioning, and you're taking out desal, fresh water, then you're looking at a major humanitarian crisis that will rapidly, rapidly worsen. Because unlike a famine, where you have weeks to respond, with this type of event, maybe you have days. You have days to start directing water, to start, you know, directing water towards people who need it, to drink it, to survive. You have a few days to respond to that type of an event. At that point, if the state of Israel is shipping in water, if their people are constantly going to their bunkers and starting to go cuckoo for cocoa nuts, then the state of Israel can either pack up and leave, or it can launch nukes. But it is 1:14 in, right? And it's around 6:38 a.m., March the 21st. I think we're going to close out here in a second, because usually if other people are going to come by, they come by about 40 minutes ago. But this is ad hoc, you know. This is not a scheduled Thursday. This is an ad hoc, accidental Saturday morning. So to all of you out there, be safe, be careful, be kind, beware. 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 There's a Care Bear. There's a Care Bear living in a cave lair. The soothsayer says that Huggy Buggy is going to come on by, and you can let out a sigh, because when it shows up, it's going to take you like a pup and cuddle you down the drain. The Care Bear is out there, and he's looking for you. And I will see you guys later on the flip side. Maybe later today, maybe next Thursday. Thursday, 3:45 p.m. Pacific Standard Time is the normal time, right? But maybe these ad hoc things will happen too, right? And I'll just reach out to you, pull you into my crazy. Have a great rest of your fucking weekend.